A person's mode of goodness and mental activities were born of the higher planetary system, similarly as the low mentalities, which are likely to be most vulnerable. Elias is a living entity in both past and future, indicated by the mental condition. Now, Ardhamuni is herein offering the king blessings of all good fortune, so that the king will not desire anything or make plans for sense gratification. The king was engaged in food and ritualistic ceremonies because he hoped to get a better life in the future. Ardhamuni desired him to give up all mental concoctions, as mentioned, explained before. All bodies and heavenly planets and hellish planets arise from mental concoctions, and the suffering and enjoyment of material life aren't simply on the mental platform. They take place on the chariot of the mind. Manorata is therefore said, one who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead has all the qualities of demigods, but one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he's hovering on the mental plane and is certainly attracted by the glaring, cheerful energy. Unless one becomes a devotee of the Lord or becomes fully Christian conscious, he will certainly hover on the mental platform, dulled and degraded in different types of bodies. All qualities that are considered good according to material estimation actually have no value, because these so-called good qualities will not save a person from the cycle of birth and death. The conclusion is that one should be without mental desire. One should be fully free from material desires, philosophical speculation, and cruel activities. The best course for a human being is to favorably accept the transcendental devotional service of the Lord as a nice preposition of life. Sometimes in a dream we see something never experienced or heard of in this life, but all these instances have been experienced at different times, in different places, and in different conditions. In the previous verse it was explained that in dreams we see what was experienced during the day, but why should we sometimes in our dreams see what we have never heard of or seen of during at any time during this life? Here it is stated that even though such events may not be experienced in this lifetime, they are experienced in previous lives. According to time and circumstance, they combine, so in dreams we see something wonderful that we've never experienced. For instance, we may see an ocean on the peak of a mountain, or we may see that the ocean has dried up. These are simply combinations of different experiences in time and space. Sometimes we may see a golden mountain. This is due to our having experienced a golden mountain separately. In the dream, under illusion, we combine these separate factors. In this way, we are able to see golden mountains or stars during the day. The conclusion is that these are all mental concoctions, although they have actually been experienced in different circumstances. They have simply combined together in a dream. This fact is further explained in the following verse. The mind of the living creator continues to exist in various gross bodies, and according to one's desires for sense gratification, the mind records different thoughts. In the mind, these appear together in different combinations. Therefore, these images sometimes appear as things never seen or never heard before. The activities of the living entity in the body of a dog may be experienced in the mind of a different body. Therefore, these activities appear never to be heard or seen. The mind continues, although the body changes. Even in this lifespan, we can sometimes experience dreams of our childhood. Although such instances now appear strange, it should just be understood that they are recorded in the mind. Because of this, they become visible in dreams. The transmigration of the soul is caused by the subtle body, which is the storehouse of all kinds of material desires. Unless one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, material desires will come and go. That is the nature of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. As long as the mind is not engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the mind will desire so many material enjoyments. Sensual images are recorded in the mind in chronological order, and they become manifest one after another. Therefore, the limited has to accept one body after another. The mind plans material enjoyment, and the ghost body serves as the instrument to realize such desires and plans. The mind is the platform onto which all desires come and go. Srinathan Das Thakur sings, Guru Mukha Pandavakya Chitsite Koriya Aikya Arana Koriya Monyas. Srinathan Das Thakur advises everyone to stick to the principles of carrying out the orders of the spiritual master. One should not desire anything else. If the regulative principles ordered by the spiritual master are followed rigidly, the mind will gradually be trained to desire nothing but the service of Krishna. This training is the perfection of life. Translation, O King, all good fortune to you. The mind is the cause of the living entities attending a certain human body, parts of its association with material nature, according to one's mental composition, one can understand what the living entity was in his past life as well as what kind of body he will have in the future. Thus the mind indicates past and future bodies. Sometimes in dream we see something never experienced or heard of in this life, but all instances have been experienced at different times, in different places, and in different conditions. The mind of the living entity continues to exist in various gross bodies, and according to one's desire for sense gratification, the mind records different thoughts. In the mind, these appear together in different combinations. Therefore, these images sometimes appear as things never seen nor never heard before. So this is all explanation of the workings of the mind and how it records different experiences, and those experiences stay there somewhere, and they may surface at certain times and in different combinations. So it's all based on experience, but what we have in the mind is not always what we experience in life, because it may be a combination of two different things. So, of course, when we talk about experience, what we experience is not actually real in one sense. There is something really happening, but we record it in a certain way, according to our likes and dislikes. So it is colored by our own mental preconceptions. So an experience for one person may be bad, the same experience for another person may be good. But it's not a different experience. It's the same experience, the same condition, but experienced differently by different people. So, therefore, it's not real in that sense. It's not completely real. It's based on the real world, but subject to distortion by our own likes and dislikes that we're already holding. So in this way, we record things in our mind with a little bit of a filter attached to it. And, of course, this can change. By the experiences we get, we can also change how we react to events in the world. So this is an advantage for us. It allows us to actually change our condition. If we're always fixed and could do nothing, then we can never progress. We get stuck in one particular guna and never get out of it. So there is a possibility of change. We have the past experiences, we have our likes and dislikes, we have present experiences, and through our experiences now, we can gradually alter our likes and dislikes and whatever. So this is the hope for the human being, that he can gradually elevate himself to a higher concept of like and dislike rather than the lower one. So this is what karma yoga does. It trains us to have preferences, higher preferences rather than lower preferences. This, of course, is not complete because it still keeps us in the material world. But at least it minimizes our suffering in the material world and minimizes the suffering of other living entities also. So that is the system we follow as far as materialism is concerned. But then we have another function of the mind, and that is to help the living entity spiritually. So not only can the mind elevate you in the material world, it can also take you beyond the material world. There is a little contradiction because the mind is material, so how can it take you to the spiritual realm? So yes, there is, and therefore, actually the material mind and the intelligence and the ego and all this is discarded by the jiva when he gets liberation. Nevertheless, still, the mind becomes useful for the advancement of the jiva out of this material world. It, yes, it must be rejected ultimately, but still, it is useful for the jiva. So, the mind is useful when it is engaged in service of the Lord. This is the way in which the mind can be used very productively. So how is the mind utilized in the service of the Lord? Of course, we have direct angas of bhakti, such as jnana, meditation on the Lord, or smarana, remembering the Lord. And of course, as I said in Nectar Devotions, and ultimately, all the rules and regulations mean two things. One, never forget the Lord, and always remember the Lord. So, all of the different engagements, the different senses, ultimately are to fix the mind on the Supreme Lord. So therefore the mind is useful. Now, of course, the mind is a material instrument, but nevertheless, it can be useful in our advancement in the service of the Lord. And so we fix our mind on the Lord, and we get a spiritual result. So, how is it possible? It is possible, of course, ultimately by the mercy of the Lord. The mercy of the Lord is there, not there, then nothing really happens in the state of the material world. So it's only due to the mercy of the Lord that actually the material mind becomes useful for getting out of the material world. So, that means that by the mercy of the Lord, bhakti appears in the jiva. And then bhakti can increase by certain activities that jiva does, including engagement of the mind. So if the mind is engaged favorably for the Lord, then the bhakti and the jiva increases. So that's a spiritual effect, even though we're using the mind. Things that are material are not necessarily condemned. They can be useful. So of course, not only the mind, all the other senses, and even material objects can be used. And they create no problem for the jiva, as long as they're used for the service of the Lord. So this is what we call mukta vairagya, detachment through engagement. So these things don't create bondage for the jiva, but rather they actually create stronger bhakti in the jiva. In other words, we get a spiritual effect even though we're utilizing material things. How is this possible? It's possible because of the mercy of the Lord. And the mercy of the Lord is there because the activities are directed towards the Lord favorably. That is, we are trying to please the Lord by our activities. Then we get a spiritual effect in the jiva, rather than getting a material effect. So, and therefore the mind has this very positive function in helping the jiva advance in bhakti. This is the best thing the mind can do. And therefore Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, concentrate your mind on the manmara bhava-bhava-bhakta. The mind should be concentrated on the Supreme Lord at all times. In this way, we get rid of this problem that we've discussed all along, that is the mind holding all the desires and impressions from previous lifetimes and having a service in this lifetime, and then due to these desires then we do activities, and this causes of course karma and further bondage. So this whole problem is avoided by using the mind differently. So here the mind is used in the wrong way. It is used to accumulate more and more impressions and more desires, which cause more and more activities. So this only prolongs our bondage in the material world. And so if we direct the mind to the Lord with the intention of pleasing Him, then we get the completely opposite effect. That is, not only we become spiritualized, but the process, all the karmas, all the impressions, all the desires accumulated for all the past lifetimes are destroyed. That is what is meant by klesha, meaning destruction of all klesha. Klesha refers to suffering. Suffering, of course, means having problems in the material world. But the cause of that is karma. Karma is caused by actions. Actions are caused by desire. Desire is caused by ignorance. So all this is destroyed by the process of bhakti. So this happens along with the development of attraction to the Lord by engaging the mind. So this is the practical way in which we can overcome all the problems in the material world. So these functions here which are mentioned are functions of the material mind which keep us in bondage in the material world. So the way we have to use the mind is quite different. That is, we have to use its functions, but we use them directly to the Supreme Lord. Then we get a completely different result.
Arjuna also told that it is difficult to control the mind, even to control the air also. So, in material view, if you can control the air, if you cannot control the mind also, so how is this one?
Well, he says difficult, but you have to practice. That's what he says. On the outside, you have to control the air. So you can control it if you practice. If you don't practice, of course, you can't do it. So therefore, mind can be controlled, but it is something you have to work on. And the principle, of course, is based upon higher taste. If you have a higher taste, you give up lower taste. If you have a taste for Krishna, then you give up the lower taste.
Why is the mind of the material?
It's custom, habit. It's been doing that for billions and billions and billions and billions of lifetimes, so it continues to do the same thing.
It's whatever is coming that is due to previous life.
Not only, this life also.
This life is the association. Now here he told us, see, whatever, don't forget God and always remember God.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget Krishna, always remember Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But see, those are jnani, they are also remembering Krishna by knowledge, by jnana.
Well, they may, but then they think Krishna is a material body. So then they're aparadis.
Oh, that is the... That is the
So that's aparada. So it has no effect. It's not bhakti.
Somebody is trying to, know the God through the knowledge.
Well, you can, but then you may also have to have proper instruction. Otherwise, you may come to the conclusion that the form of God is material, by material knowledge. So that's wrong. So if you get proper knowledge, fine. But then it has to be through devotees also, otherwise you tend to get wrong ideas. So that's why we have to take the scripture through devotees of the Lord, not through impersonalists or other people.
Guru Maharaj, what will be the position of one who thinks Krishna to be an avatar of Krishna?
Then he goes to Vishnu.
This is a better question than I have.
निरंतराशी श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय जिसमें महाराज की जय प्रभाव की जय
प्रबंधी
Yes, sir.